operator. I will now hand you over to your host, Mr. Benoit Mathieu from Investor Relations, to begin today's conference. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Priscilla. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Benoit Mathieu, Group Investor Relations Manager. Thank you all for dialing into this conference call and for being with us for the presentation of our full year results 2022. I'm joined in the room by our CEO, Mr. Léon Van Rompuy, Mr. Christophe Maréchal, CFO, Mr. Graham Dixon, CSO, Mr. Jean-Manuel Fontaine, Chief Commercial Officer. Professor Jean-Michel Froidard will join the Q&A session in order to answer the questions on the safety results released a few days ago. This webcast is recorded and will be accessible later today on Mitra's website. I would like to remind you that this webcast is covered by the disclaimer on slide 2 of the presentation. The format of today's call will be as follows. A review of the 2022 major realizations and post-closing events will be presented by Léon before handing over to Christophe for the explanation of the financial results. Graham will then provide an update of our progress in research and development, and then Jean-Manuel will conclude with a commercial update. We will then open the lines for a Q&A session. Thank you very much, and I would like to now hand over to Léon.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you all for dialing in. Last year, as well as the first 2 months of this year, have been quite intense for Mitra, with several operational milestones achieved. Let's start with our core asset, Donesta. We announced last year the positive top-line efficacy results of the phase 3, with the co-primary efficacy endpoints being met in a statistically significant way for both trials, for the C301 and for the C302 studies, also for our European and our American study. Moreover, last Friday, we were pleased to share the promising safety results from our Donesta phase 3 study in North America. In a few minutes, Graham will explain you the results in more detail. These safety results are supporting overall good safety profile of Donesta, and they will support the filing with the U.S. regulatory agencies anticipated by end of June 23. On the business development side, we announced a few weeks ago the closing of our license agreement for Donesta with Gedeon Richter, our long-standing partner. As you know, we signed a binding term sheet on 20 December last year, and in less than 2 months, we completed the full agreement. The territory covered by the agreement are geographical Europe, the CIS countries, Latin America, Australia, and New Zealand. As a reminder, we received $5 million upfront at the signature of the head of terms in December last year, and $50 million at the signature of the final agreement mid-February. On the U.S. deal, our discussions with the partners are progressing well. With the positive safety results released a few days ago, we are more than ever convinced that we will sign before the end of June 23. Now about Estelle. Main Pharma, or United States partner, enjoyed week-on-week new records for next prescriptions through February, and they announced to increase their investment in Extellis, or Estelle, by $20 million in the United States and in Australia to drive that growth forward to be able to grow even faster. In Europe, we are very pleased with the levels of sales realized by Guido Richter. Last year, $60 million at their part, beating their initial outlook of $50 million by 7%. Most probably, you noticed in the press already that we agreed on a global new agreement or arrangement for Estelle. Gideon Richter will be in charge of the supply and the production of Estelle for all their territories. However, our royalties remain fully intact. Mitra still receives the same royalties as agreed in the original contract. And now, our CDMO and our complex therapeutics portfolio. In August last year, we received the approval of the FDA for Myrine, our contraceptive vaginal ring. We just launched Myrine beginning of this year in the United States. As a reminder, Myrine is produced in our CDMO. Last year, we produced a record of 1 million rings. We signed several service contracts with third parties, MedinCell and Verry Bioscience, for a revenue of a total of $2.3 million. It's our ambition to intensify our business development in the coming months. We explore proactively all strategic options to unlock the value of our CDMO, whether with industrial partners or investors, in order to optimize the tremendous potential of this versatile technology tool. Last but not least, I want to come back on the amounts disputed by Mitra with our E4 manufacturer. Mitra disputes firmly some payments claimed by the manufacturer. Based on an assessment and our available stocks, Mitra confirms to have sufficient volume of Espestral in order to meet the current needs of our partners. To mitigate the risks, Mitra had already initiated in the past a process of selecting extra suppliers of Espestral, this to be on the safe side. This gives us the possibility to secure the continuity of Espestral deliveries in the medium and in the long term. I will now hand over to Christophe for the summary of the financial results. Please, Christophe, all yours.
Thank you, Leon. Good morning, everyone. Let's start with our financial results. In light of the analyst consensus received, our performance was as anticipated in what is still a transition year for us in light of Estelle's products revenues. At the end of 2022, revenues were €67 million versus €23 million last year, mainly driven by the out-licensing upfront payment from Gedeon Richter deal for Donesta. For such deal, we recognized an amount of €44.7 million for the signature and the contract assets, out of €55 million according to IFRS 15 methodology, so the non-refundable amount. Contract was used as the cash collection and invoicing was done in 2023. A license and supply agreement with Gedeon Richter in Latin America for Estelle also allowed us to recognize not licensing revenues of €4.1 million. Our other revenues mainly come from product sales and contracts, namely €9.2 million for Estelle, €6.5 million for our generic portfolio, and finally, €2.3 million for R&D contracts from CDMO. Regarding expenses, we ended up the year with a decrease of 30% of our R&D expenses compared to 2021, as R&D, excluding amortization, stood at €53.7 million in 2022 versus €76.6 million last year. This is the result of a decision to focus on core R&D projects that brings unlimited value to both Donesta and Esta. Other R&D projects have been delayed or were pursued if they had a limited impact on the cash burn of Mitra. G&A were slightly higher versus last year at €11.7 million due to general increase in insurance, salaries, taxation, etc. EBITDA stood at -€14.3 million versus -€77.5 million last year, and is the result of both a revenue increase combined with a decrease in operating expenses compared to last year. Below EBIT, you will note a positive impact of 28.3 million euro booked in the change in fair value of the Euturon liability, which is reported under other financial liabilities, and also plus 9.9 million euro of financial income, which is composed of 3.6 million euro of amortized cost treatment of the refundable government advances. Also, 3 million euro of dividends from Mayne Pharma, as it was voted in November 2022. And finally, 2.5 million euro from the early repurchase at discounts of convertible bonds. Financial expenses have increased a lot and are mainly driven by an increase of the interest expenses. It is to be noted that the interest due under the hybrid white box loans had been paid in shares and not in cash, but has still impacted the same account in our profit and loss account. There is also a currency impact, as we reported 5.9 million euro of realized foreign exchange losses for the settlement of a FX forward transaction, which was not possible to be extended. Loss before taxes stood at -11.5 million euro versus -123.8 million euro the previous year. So much improved as a consequence of all the above-mentioned items. The net loss for the period, which is taking into account the taxes impact, stood at -59.6 million euro versus -116.9 million euro previous year. As an introductory comment, it must be reminded that these are non-cash items. As you can see, there is a reversal of a significant amount of deferred tax assets for 47.7 million euro out of 48.8 million euro tax losses due to two reasons. Firstly, we are pleased to inform that Mithra received a positive ruling from the Belgian tax authorities. This ruling enables us to benefit from the innovation income deduction mechanism for our two core assets, Estelle and Donesta. This ruling is improving our internal tax planning strategy, as from July 2021 onward, this IID will allow us to deduct 85% of the net income derived from IP rights, which would lead to an effective tax rate around 5% for Estetra. Secondly, a tax audit on the fiscal deductibility of the Euturon future contingent debt payments has been conducted, and we have modified the assumptions that were taken into account with the deferred tax computations, but without any cash consequences for us. Throughout the year and early 2023, we collected several major cash milestones. The most important one comes from the Gedeon Richter for the signature of the Donesta deal in Europe and some other countries. We collected 5 million euro in 2022, and 50 million euro post-closing in February 2023. Donesta was not the only cash driver in 2022 and early 2023. We are proud to say that our efforts for marketing approval in the U.S. have paid off, with the approval received from the FDA in the summer 2022. That led to a cash collection of 6 million euro from our partner, Mayne Pharma, in H2 2022, and also to a cash collection of 1.6 million euro early 2023, following the commercialization of the vaginal ring in the United States. Moreover, we also collected 1 million euro for Estelle in Latin America from Gedeon Richter in 2022. As a result of this cash collection and expenses, our cash position stood at 28 million euro end 2022, and 67.5 million euro end February 2023, considering those significant post-closing events. So next slide on the cash evolution. In 2022, we used several financing lines, such as mentioned, hybrid and white box, GOM, Saks, LDA, and we executed with success a private placement in equity in June. The proceeds of these utilizations transactions have been used mainly for the financing of our operations, but also to buy back 34 million euro of our unsecured convertible bonds maturing in 2025 at 15% discount to par. Cash stood at 28.3 million euro at the end of 2022, and as said previously, 67.5 million euro at the end of February 2023. Taking into account cash collection from Donesta signature, the milestones related to Myrin commercialization in the U.S., as well as Mayne's dividend for approximately 3 million euros. Besides on the financial means. On top of that cash position and the BD progress, which should generate additional licensing milestones in 2023, Mithra can still access two financing facilities. The LBA capital commitment agreement is still available for almost 53 million euro, and the last tranche of 25 million euro of the convertible loan signed with Highbridge and Whitebox is still fully available. It is also important to note that the outstanding loan under the Highbridge-Whitebox convertible loan is 50.5 million euro, which is split in two tranches. One of 32 million euro, which was originally drawn for 50 million euro in August last year, which is called the Tranche A, and one of 18.4 million euro, which was originally drawn for 25 million euro in November, the Tranche B. Altogether, 50.5 million euro outstanding. The Tranche A loans cannot be converted in shares below a floor price of 6.07 euro for the Mithra stocks, and Tranche B loans at 4.25 euro, both discounted with 10%, so respectively 5.46 euro and 3.83 euro. I now hand over to Graeme.
Thank you, Christophe, and good morning, everybody. I'd like to start by reminding you all of the excellent efficacy data that we reported at the start of 2022 for the Donesta study, in which we demonstrated statistical significance and a meaningful reduction in the primary endpoint, the frequency and severity of moderate to severe VMS. All these co-primary endpoints were significant. Both the frequency and severity also continued to decrease over the three-month treatment period, which indicates a very robust and durable response. The decline of VMS to 80% compared to baseline and severity to 56% compared to baseline is certainly at the top end of the data that you see for other products treating VMS in comparable studies. We're very excited about these data. In addition to the primary endpoints, the secondary endpoints, quality of life, all evaluated at the three-month time point in the European study, actually pointed in the same direction as the primary endpoints. In terms of efficacy, we have an approvable product on our hands. We're here today to speak about the safety data, and I just wanted to refresh your memories of the design of the U.S., the C-302 study. This was essentially two parts. They had the efficacy study, which I've just reported, that was a three-month treatment. There was then either a nine-month safety extension to those women or an independent 12-month safety part. This was to give E4 alone. This was at the request of the FDA, so they could actually see the incidence of effects on the endometrium, which are totally expected when you give an estrogen to non-hysterectomized women. The safety data from this study have been received in batches. We had the first batch just before the end of the year. We've received another batch in early February, and we anticipate having the final tables and listings available during the course of March. So in terms of the conclusions from the safety study, Donesta's overall safety profile has been confirmed after 1 year of treatment. This is very consistent with previous studies with E4, both for Donesta but also for our contraceptive Estelle. There were no safety issues and no drug-related life-threatening events or deaths. In terms of a bit more detail, in hysterectomized women, Donesta at both doses, 15 and 20 milligrams, was well tolerated. In non-hysterectomized women, as expected from an estrogen alone treatment, endometrial events were observed, like bleeding, biopsy findings, but importantly, we had no cases of carcinoma in the study. Once the estrogen was administered and followed with the progesterone, endometrial thickening was either partially or completely reversed within the two-week treatment period with the progesterone. This was to the satisfaction of our DSMB, which of course is responsible for looking at the safety of the patients. But it indicates, as expected, that the E4 will need to be delivered with a progestin or a progesterone in order to curb the effect on the endometrium. In terms of adverse events, a vast majority were mild or moderate in severity, with less than 5% actually appearing as severe adverse events. In hysterectomized women, breast tenderness and nipple pain were the most frequent side effects. And then again, as expected in non-hysterectomized women, bleeding, breast tenderness, biopsy-related AEs, endometrial thickening, abdominal pain, and nipple pain were the most frequent adverse events. We again saw positive impacts on bone turnover, and this was as measured by a decrease in biomarkers CTX1 and P1NP at both weeks 12 and week 52, so after 1 year. These were both statistically significant and also indicate that, as with other estrogens, E4 will likely have an effect on improvement of bone density and therefore a positive impact on women with osteoporosis. The cholesterol profile also, we observed a beneficial effect with significant decrease in both total cholesterol and LDL levels. As with other studies, hemostatic parameters and hepatic markers showed minimal changes, confirming previous clinical and biochemical evidence. So those are the top-line safety data. Again, we see no barriers to being able to approve the product based on those. So both in terms of efficacy and safety, we can now progress to submission of the dossier. We have already engaged with the FDA in a Type C meeting in which we confirmed what would be necessary for submission. So nothing has changed in terms of our interactions since we had the end of phase two meeting, and which was used to design the phase three program. The next step is a pre-submission meeting with the FDA in Q2, and then the final filing of the dossier by the end of June this year. So everything on track in terms of the U.S. filing based on the data we've seen. Just now to update on the European study. As you may recall, we had to add additional women to this study to meet the EMA's requirements to have 300 paired biopsies and read by pathologists. This was impacted during the COVID pandemic, which caused some women to drop out because they couldn't attend the hospital during lockdowns. And it also had to be amended because of the situation with Russia. But we now have completed the screening of the patients. That was in the end of December last year. Last patient enrolled should be very soon now in this quarter. And then last patient, last visit would be Q1 2024, leading to a MAA submission in Q2 2024. We are also taking the approach to differentiate and increase the value of Donesta in a stepwise manner. The initial indication will be control of hot flushes, but we have embarked on three phase II proof of concept studies in order to add to the claims and possibly indications eventually of Donesta. We have a trial in skin health. This is a six-month study, 20 milligrams versus placebo. We have conditional approval from the ethics committee. We have approval from the competent authorities. We just have to amend the protocol to incorporate some amendments that the ethics committee required, and we anticipate to have first patients screened in that study during this quarter. We also have a study on herd density and quality, again, a six-month study. That has been submitted, and we await feedback from the ethics and the competent authorities. And we also anticipate that we can start screening during this quarter with that study. We have a final proof of concept study in female sexual arousal disorder. That is a three-month study. We have CRO selection ongoing. We anticipate having first patients screened in Q3. And with all the three studies, we anticipate having clinical study reports by the end of 2024. These will be published, but if any of the data are positive, we could then plan to do further studies that would allow us to include claims or indications in the product label for these particular factors. We're also looking into the impact of E4 on neurodegeneration. There have been quite a number of clinical studies reported in the last year or so. We have a fairly extensive preclinical program ongoing to demonstrate this and underpin the clinical findings with science. We also will explore examining blood Alzheimer's markers in the phase III samples. And we will also discuss with our partners a separate clinical study to explore the role of E4 in neurodegeneration. So now moving on to another project, an exciting project in my mind. It diversifies us away from E4. It's a collaboration with BCI Pharma, a small Belgian biotech, on colony-stimulating factor 1 receptor tyrosine kinase. This is a research collaboration with the option to acquire the intellectual property. We have generated four series of novel compounds that are inhibitors of this kinase. This will be covered eventually by three composition of matter patents. These, of course, are the strongest form of IP. And we've taken lead compounds from one series of the compounds, and we've tested these in gold standard industry models. Just before I report on those, I just wanted to make some definitions so you can understand in detail what I'm saying. So in preclinical and clinical, you can have three levels of proof of activity. You have proof of mechanism, which is actually target engagement, looking at biomarkers usually. You can have proof of principle, which is a change in a biological effect that's normally associated with the disease process. And you can have a proof of concept, which is actually a beneficial change in the disease outcome itself. So we have tested the BCI compound in an endometriosis model. We have demonstrated a very positive proof of concept in this model with a reduction in the endometrial cysts, a reduction in the pain associated with the endometriosis, and a general improvement of the well-being of the animals. We've demonstrated a proof of principle and also a proof of concept in a murine colon cancer model where we see a modulation of the tumor microenvironment. So this is really an immunotherapy. And actually, as a monotherapy, we saw up to a 60% reduction in tumor volume in this model. We've also demonstrated a proof of principle in inflammatory and in inflammasome in vivo models. which opened up another range of potential indications, of course. And we now have four additional studies ongoing in order to finalize the decision on the acquisition of the IP. These are mainly in triple-negative breast cancer and colon cancer, and here we are exploring the combination with a checkpoint inhibitor, in this case a PD-1 inhibitor, where we really expect either an additive or a synergistic effect. If those data are positive, we would then move on to acquire the intellectual property. And just before finishing, I just wanted to touch on three other projects just to update you on the status. So Zorolene, we have now developed 3 1-month formulations. These will enter the clinic this year. We will put two of the formulations into a PK study. Based on that PK, we will decide which formulation to take forward into the pivotal PK-PD. We are also finalizing the formulation development of the 3-month formulation, which we hope to have progressed to completion by the end of this year. In neuroprotection, so in neonatal hypoxic ischemic encephalopathy, we have a phase 1 healthy volunteer study ongoing with the IV formulation, and we anticipate starting a phase 1b in neonates in half 1 2024. In wound healing, we've developed a topical formulation of E4. We are in the process of making the clinical batch with the aim of entering into a phase 2 proof of concept in venous leg ulcers in the first half of next year. And with that, I'd like to hand over to Jean-Manuel Fontaine to update us on the commercial strategy.
Thank you, Graham, and good morning, everyone. I will start this commercial update with Estelle in the US and Europe, the largest territories. I'm still here. And also, I'll move on with the Meyering and Donestat to close my presentation. So let's start with our contraceptive product, Estelle. Commercialized has started, as you know, in 2021, and all major territories of the world are today covered by license and supply agreements. In the first half of 2022, a second series of EU countries have launched, including Spain, the Netherlands, Portugal, Switzerland, and also Australia, UK Nordics, and Russia have launched in the second half. Brazil market authorization is expected in first half of 2023, and the latter represents the largest South American market with a value exceeding 500 million. Additional filings occurred in key Latin and additional Eastern countries, including Ukraine. If we move on now to our operational highlights, let's start with the United States, which represents the largest combined hormonal contraceptive market, estimated at $4 billion annually, showing a slight growth. Metrics in 2022 continue to show strong traction in terms of prescription and new prescriptions translating into sales for Nextstellis. And on the right, you can see the sales levels of key combined hormonal contraceptives. May-June 2023 commercial outlook reflects continued growth for Nextstellis. Maine announced in 2022 the acquisition of Therapeutics MD portfolio. This acquisition, together with the divestment of their CDMO business and ongoing and planned sale of their generic business, increases Maine's focus and dedication to the branded women health business, which will strengthen Nextstellis' commercial organization and overall dedication to the brand performance, Nextstellis. With an increase of their sales force, complementing their team with experienced sales teams will add additional reach, capability, and increase touch points for Nextstellis and targeting efforts. More than 160,000 cycles have been dispensed in 2022, with an approximate 50% increase in monthly cycle from January to December, exceeding 20,000 cycles monthly, and week-on-week records for NEXTSTELLIS prescriptions through February, reflecting continued traction. The new management team and refreshed board, with strong U.S. pharma business acumen, is helping to hone sales and marketing strategies to deliver growth. Sales force expansion via select TherapeuticsMD hires, updated targeting, and refreshed messaging, as well as channel optimization, is taking place. The direct-to-consumer campaign TV commercial has been launched in February 2023 across website and social media and will support NEXTSTELLIS adoption rate, with additional campaigns capitalizing on the leading U.S. digital direct-to-consumer healthcare platform, GoodRx. The Affordable Care Act guidance will drive growth of contraception at no additional cost and should support main sales target at 350,000 cycles dispensed sold from July 2022 to June 2023, setting a strong sales trajectory for the brand. If we now move on to Europe, NEXTSTELLIS commercialized under the brand name Drovelis. Gedeon Richter, our partner in charge of NEXTSTELLIS distribution in Europe, has already launched in several key countries such as Germany, Poland, France, Italy, and together with smaller EU countries like Hungary, Slovakia, or Austria. In 2022, additional key countries were added like Spain, U.K., Netherlands, Switzerland, Nordics, and other Eastern territories to help reach the European 2022 sales objectives. These sales levels have increased sixfold versus 2021 to reach €60 million sales, slightly above their projections, and outlook for 2023 is looking good, with additional CIS and Eastern EU countries also to be launched. Performance has been driven so far by Italy, Germany, Poland. In 2023, other territories will contribute more significantly to the regional performance and the promising 2023 commercial outlook. Interestingly, Europe has conducted a pan-European market research similar to the US to help understand the attributes supporting the prescription and also the intention to prescribe. And this first wave of pan-European market research conducted is supporting Drovelis uptake. Even though Drovelis is not yet universally prescribed, the intention to prescribe is high in Italy, Germany, and Spain in the next 6 months, showing confidence in the future sales uptake for 2023. Going on to Myrin, Halaved, the Mithra generic version of NuvaRing, has been approved by the FDA in August 2022, and the launch in January 2023 triggered $6 million and an additional $1.6 million payments to Mithra, as previously mentioned by our CEO and CFO. The market remains significant, representing about 560 million rings, $560 million US dollars, more than 5.6 million rings. And the recent announcement of Mayne of the planned sale of the generic business to Dr. Reddy should support Halaved product uptake in the US, thanks to Dr. Reddy's legacy in the generic business and very strong and established distribution networks in the United States. On the Denista business development front, as previously mentioned, the company signed a major license and supply agreement for its commercialization in Europe, CIS Latin America, Australia, New Zealand. Under the terms of this agreement, Metro is eligible to receive $55 million, five at signature, and an additional for 50 were received upon the license and supply agreement. An additional $15 million milestone is subject to specific regulatory achievements. Metro is also eligible to receive tier double-digit royalties, depending on the net sales evolution during the 20-year terms contract. Negotiation for commercialization rights for Denestan in the United States are ongoing and should materialize during the first half of 2023, in line with previous announcements. Important to keep in mind that the collapse of the hormone therapy following the initial publication of the WHI led to a great unmet medical need among menopausal women who were all of a sudden confronted with a therapeutic void still largely underserved today. Misperception and inappropriate underuse of hormone therapy has created a very significant unmet medical need, which today represents a major public health matter impacting work and society. We believe Denestan, the first E4 hormone therapy, has a unique value proposition across the menopausal spectrum of symptoms to address this public health issue and build women and doctors' confidence for safe and effective hormone therapy.
We can now move to the Q&A session.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question or make a contribution on today's call, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll now take our first question from Laura Roba from D Group Petercam. Please go ahead, miss. Your line is open.
Thank you for taking my question. So first of all, you recently mentioned that you were investigating different options regarding the CDMO. Could you elaborate a bit on those and timing-wise, what should we look at? Thank you.
That's not the question. Yeah, if I may tell you, we explore all options. We are looking for a strong partner, whether it's an industrial partner or a financial partner. All options are open, and we take the best deal we can find, and for the future of the company, and for the people working in the company, that's for sure.
Okay. And then maybe a second question. I think you mentioned previously that R&D will remain high in 2023 and that this year will not yet be a reference year for Estelle. So could you elaborate a bit on how you look at 2023 financing-wise?
Yeah, we mentioned that R&D would be somewhere in the range of 2022 in terms of amounts to be expensed. And we're talking here about the core R&D projects, menopause, contraceptions, API investment, also these phase two studies that Graham told you about. It's clear that everything that is BCI, NI, NHIE, wood eating is not waiting a lot in 2023. We've taken safe assumptions on the revenues of Estelle, and so we expect these revenues for now in our cash forecast to be in the same range than those of 2022, because you know it's all about using the stock. Also, you know that for now they are launching the product, so they're still in the United States a big percentage of samples. And these samples, which were representing 50% of the volumes in the United States in 2022, is waiting on the revenues of Mitra, because we're not selling those. We are selling those samples, but not at the same level than the supply price of a trade products. So it's going to be still impacting 2023, but it's going the right direction. We see a reduction. We expect a reduction of the samples. And so meaning more trade products to be sold in 2023. So it's going the right direction, including also, as explained on Myrin, now the sales of the launch of Myrin sales has been starting in 2023. Going forward, we expect this to increase, and certainly the news of Dr. Reddy, let's say, taking on board the portfolio, the generic portfolio of Mayne Pharma, is for us a good thing in terms of expectations on the revenue side. So, it's 2023 will not be the year where our revenues will be exploding, but it's going the right direction. And as we explained, we have still some, let's say, financing, let's say, lines available to Mitra. We all know that these financing lines have dilution potential effects, so we try to avoid using them as much as we can. And of course, the BD tractions, and so the realization we expect in the United States on Donesta will also serve the interest of the financing of the company, and so probably try to use part of these facilities available to Mitra.
Okay, very clear. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll now move on to our next participant, Thomas Rankin from KBC Securities.
Good morning. Thanks
Please go ahead, sir. Your line is open.
Thank you. Good morning, and thanks for taking my question. First question that I had was with regards to the timelines for Donesta in the U.S. I just wanted to clarify there whether a commercial partnership is that something that needs to be done before the regulatory filing can be submitted, and if that is the case, would that is there a chance that this would impact and the timelines that were mentioned of filing by the end of H1?
Hi, it's Graham here. We're prepared for both scenarios, to be honest. We have strengthened the R&D team since we actually got approval for Estelle. We have the people that got the approval of Estelle, so we believe we can move forward on our own to get a positive outcome in the US. We also have all the infrastructure in the US, regulatory and medical advice to give us the local input, if you like. If we have a partner, they can get involved in terms of either the dossier finalization, if we sign that soon, or in terms of the approval process, bringing, you know, more expert FDA-like knowledge. So we prepared for both scenarios. If we were to get a partner, I'm sure the partner would be as driven as us to try and keep the timelines to get the approval, as we've said.
Okay, thank you. And the second question that I wanted to ask was more on the financing side. As mentioned during the webcast, there is still some remaining cash, at least 77 million, that is still available with LDA and convertible and the convertible loan. Could you provide some clarity on what the company intends to do with that? Will there are you anticipating to make use of that remaining cash in the course of 2023?
Yeah, first, I wanted to remind the outstanding high-bridge white box loan conversion features, because I've read many notes where some assumptions of even conversion at €1 were taken into account. So it's clear it cannot happen. So I think it was first very interesting to point that out to all of you. Second, yes, we have available, let's say, financing line, and which might be used, of course, to accompany the business development, let's say, journey for the United States deal, or might be also used for the development of some R&D, let's say, project if needed. As I said previously, we will work on and try to avoid as much as we can to use these facilities, as they have certainly with FDA, limited dilution impact, wine with high-pitch white box, the dilution impact is not immediate. Like, as you know, when we use, we still have the possibility to force, let's say, a repayment if we have the financial means to do so and avoid so dilution. And so I believe that capacity to repay ourselves has not been taken into account in all the scenarios that led to some target price, let's say, conclusion these recent weeks. So these are scenarios that on which we work, and of course the value of the US deal will serve for that purpose if needed. So we can use them, and as I said, we would try to use them as less as we can.
Okay, very clear. And a final question, if I may, is with regards to the Astellas sales or the Nextellas sales in the US. I understand some progress being made there with the direct-to-consumer marketing that campaign that has been launched, also at strengthening of the sales force from Therapeutics MD. Do you already anticipate this to have a major impact in the course of 2023, or when can we start seeing that in the numbers?
Right, so the TV commercial ad has just been launched in February, so we should expect, so we should see an acceleration from February of the impact of the direct to consumer. So hopefully in the next 3 months we'll see an impact on the trajectory.
Okay, thank you.
You should also understand that usually between November and January, the direct-to-consumer campaigns go dark just because there's collision with Halloween and Christmas and then the diet promotions on the web. So for about 3 to 4 months, the direct-to-consumer campaigns are kind of put on hold. So they really resume in February, and this is with the TV commercial, which is the most significant part in the direct-to-consumer efforts.
Okay, very clear. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll now move on to our next participant, Maxim Stranet from ING Bank. Please go ahead, sir. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning. Three questions, if I may. One probably for Jean-Manuel and the other for Christophe. First of all, for Jean-Manuel, looking at the performance of Estelle worldwide, back of the envelope computation there, that basically Gideon generated roughly 5 million in sales for Mitra, basically meaning that the 4 other millions are main pharma. It's a bit counterintuitive to me that the US are generating less sales than Europe for you. Any color on that would be helpful. And also, if I remember correctly, you mentioned previously that the pickup was expected to materialize in the second half of 2022. You're now talking about February 2023. Any reason for that delay? And then secondly, the two for Christophe, more on the accounting side and on the financing side. First of all, so you mentioned that only a part of the Donesta deal was recognized in the P&L. Any view on when the other part will be recognized? And secondly, you mentioned that you have a floor price for the conversion with the Highbridge White Box facility. If you would like to pay your interest in kind, do you have also a floor in terms of share price, or is it like free for you? That would be all for me. Thank you.
Okay, so that's quite an extensive question. I'm not sure I captured all of your the aspects of your question, so I apologize if I'm not complete, and so please do not hesitate to re-ask. But so for the United States, we did mention in 2021 that there was a delay in the sales uptake. I think we've gone through that in 2021, and we should really look at the commercial uptake in the United States only from December 21, January 22. And so month after month, we are seeing a significant ramp up in the United States. The U.S. have also confirmed a sales target for June 2023. which is, to our interpretation, an interesting sales trajectory that we hope to see further accelerate and ramp up. Also with the integration of Therapeutics MD and the strengthening of their sales force, also the appointment of a new CEO, new board members, reflecting the ambition of Maine to be a leading company in women health in the United States. So we hope all of those, we are hopeful that all of those changes are going to further impact positively the U.S. business, because the Maine has made some strong decisions selling off their contract business and also their planned sale of their generic business. So this is only all to focus on Nextstellis, which remains their number one and top brand. So ambition and the changes made are there. We are seeing a good sales trajectory. We do hope to see some acceleration in the second quarter of this year. Did I answer partially at least your question?
Yes. Overall, you did cover all the topics. Thank you.
Yeah, I didn't get all of them. But I'm happy to get on the call afterwards if needed.
So, thank you.
Let's address also the question of the recognition of the upfront licensing milestones of Gedeon Richter. We know that as the cash collection has happened for a big part in 2023. What we had to do is to account for the revenue recognition, account these milestones in the what is called the contract assets, so under the asset side of the balance sheet. Now that these milestones have been all invoiced and cash collected in 2023, you will have a new accounting treatment. So the current the contract assets will reflect what has been able to be recognized fully and will not change. And then you will have what is called the contract liability, which will be reporting what could be refunded in case Mitra is not able to achieve some milestones. And it is important to note that some 7.5 million euro milestones might be reimbursed if we are not able to obtain a registration of Donesta by June 2027. So it's very late compared to what we expect to be the market utilization, as explained by Graham. So we consider from an R&D point of view that the risk of having to repay is very low, but still from a conservative point of view, we decided not to recognize these amounts as of today, and we will monitor the performance of our filing process. And once we will see evidences that the 30th of June 2027 is not a concern anymore, we might be recognizing these amounts as a contract asset. But as of today, we keep a very, let's say, conservative position on that performance, which is 30th June 2027 to get a market authorization. So regarding the floor price, it was not super clear the question. It has to do because I've given you the information regarding the floor price, which are applying to tranche A and tranche B. So the 32 million euro loan and 18 million euro loan, which are respectively 5.46 euro discounted and 3.83 euro discounted in terms of Mitra stock price. But it's clear that until today, and there will be, of course, if we do get access to the Tranche C, there will be a new floor price to be applied. But as we haven't yet make access to that Tranche C, we cannot communicate on what could be the floor price of that tranche. Regarding the other, let's say, features of that facility, of course, the payment of interest and also the payment of option prepayment amount. As you know, we can elect to either pay in cash or, depending of the financial need of the company, we can elect to pay in kind, and so pay in the form of shares this payment to Highbridge and Whitebox. And until today, at each loan, let's say, maturity renewal date, we've decided to pay those interests in shares. And when they have converted, there was also an additional amount to be paid in the form of option prepayment amount. And this option prepayment amount have for now also been paid in the form of shares instead of cash. Of course, in the future, if we can elect paying in cash based on our financial means, we will do, because we wish, and we are, the focus is of course to avoid dilution, but until today we wanted to give all the chances for the BT progress and keep our cash for the sake of serving the business development journey. That might change in the future.
Thank you. We'll now move on to our next participant, Clement Bassat from Potsdam Park. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hello. Thank you for taking my questions. One question, so about your cost of the sales. If I remove the milestones on 2021 and 2022, they are very close or above your sales. So could you please provide some colors about what is included in this line? And also, why are you starting a preclinical project in tyrosine kinase? This is far from your core product, which is already in commercial price. I mean, it will only increase your cash burn in opposition with your strategy to reduce it. Thank you.
Yeah. Regarding the cost of goods, it is clear that it's all about, in fact, the U.S. Huh? You have understood that for now on Estelle, the relationship with Gain Richter is on royalties that we receive on each sales of Gain Richter, and so there is no cost of goods there relation. In the U.S., you have understood that, and this is what I mentioned to you, that we are selling both trade and samples. And samples are not sold at the same price than trade products. And for now, it's clear that this is a basic principle of samples, that usually you don't make a lot of money, or even you lose a little bit of money on your sales of samples. It's going to be reducing in the future, and so we should be in the U.S. Delivering and supplying our partners more with trade products. So it will bring, of course, accordingly, more value, more margin on the sell. But it's also very clear, and we have mentioned that several times, that for now, the cost of goods of Estelle, because we are at the start of our operations, and so we have an E4 with that has been produced in low levels by a partner sequence, and that E4 is for now quite expensive compared to the you know, we have used some validation batches that have been produced by the partners, which are more expensive than E4 that you would get at the standardized cost production price. So it's clear that for now, what we put in the pill, so the E4, is much more expensive than what will be the E4 in the coming years. And so it is impacting also the cost of goods that will be reducing over the years based on the quantities of E4 that we'll be getting from the suppliers, but also because, as you know, we're working on various, let's say, improvement of the E4 synthesis pathway, not only the chemistry pathway, but also we're working on the flow chemistry, and we might be also finding other ways to produce cheaper the E4. So we have plans to further, let's say, improve the cost of goods, but this is the reality of today. Mitra is giving a lot of samples to our partner in the US to accompany the launch, and it is impacting the gross margin.
All right.
Deze oproep werd onderbroken. Zetapel heeft interrompu. Deze aanroep wurde onderbroken. This call was interrupted.
Hello, can you hear us? Can you hear us?
Hello.
Priscilla?
Yes, I can hear you. All right, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask for more questions, please press star one.
Can I just perhaps before we ask for other questions address the tyrosine kinase question that we just had? In terms of focus, our focus will clearly be in the women's health arena. We have an opportunity, and we've demonstrated proof of concept in endometriosis. We also will be looking at female cancers, breast cancer, cervical cancer, ovarian cancer. And we have two models ongoing at the moment preclinically to show positive effects in triple negative breast cancer, which is a very high unmet medical need and actually an orphan indication to pursue. So the focus, I think, is there. Tyrosine kinases are an exciting class. I think it's the third largest class of targets in terms of revenues. It gives us diversification away from E4. It gives us composition of matter patents, which are the strongest you can have to cover your assets. And I think in terms of the costs, for me, it's nicely phased with Donesta, because Donesta hopefully will be approved next year. We may have some further costs in terms of life cycle management, but essentially a lot of the costs will disappear from Donesta. And that's when, if we manage to get to the clinic with the tyrosine kinase compounds, that's when we anticipate entering clinical. And up to that point, the actual cash burn is relatively low in the preclinical stage.
Yeah, you will be in the range of €2 million until we get certain year an approval in the United States or the Nesta. So it's very low, let's say, R&D expenses for the BCI portfolio products, and this has to be noted. We are not jeopardizing the cash of Mitra and investing massively in R&D projects. As we said, we first use the cash to create immediate value on the cell and the Nesta.
As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you have any further questions, please press star one. All right, we will take our next question from Beatrice Allen from Berenberg. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Great, thanks. Hi, guys. I just had a quick question on Estelle in the US. First of all, just kind of on the side, obviously we're doing the commercial direct-to-consumer campaign launching in February, which should be great. But my understanding is the kind of the efficacy of that is somewhat linked to the unrestricted coverage on the reimbursement side. So can you give us an update on where you are with that? Are you currently at kind of the standard level you're seeing from the lotion, for example, or still slightly below that level?
So the commercial coverage is close to 60%. So there's 55 commercial coverage with no restriction, and there's an additional I believe 10 to 15% commercial restriction, commercial coverage with restriction. But again, with the Affordable Care Act in 2023, there should be no copay, no restriction. The women are entitled to get their pill at with limited to no copay with and no restriction. So that is the guidance from the Affordable Care Act. It is in place in the United States. Of course, with the different pharmacist, the benefit manager, the PBM, it might not be fully applied everywhere all at the same time, but the trend is there. So we should not be facing this issue anymore in 2023. So we are monitoring with Maine the impact of the Affordable Care Act and also how how these prescriptions are dispensed and whether there's any pushback. But that's the situation, and the Affordable Care Act should weigh this challenge that we've had so far.
And then just in terms of inventory dynamics, because we've seen before that obviously Maine ramped up with you guys it just to stock themselves ahead of the launch, and then they were working through that, and as a result your sales weren't necessarily fully correlated with theirs. Can you talk about where your inventory levels, you think inventory levels are at the moment?
So we're matching, of course, the commercial sales and the inventory, and as previously addressed, the inventory was relatively high on their side, and particularly with a slow commercial ramp up. But in 23, commercial sales and inventory orders are going to be progressively synchronizing, and we anticipate that in 2024, we'll be back to totally a new, a regular situation where there's going to be more sales than probably inventory. So that's what we're seeing, because of course there was a stocking effect with the launch.
Great, thanks so much.
So 23, so it's improving. So by during 23 and particularly in 24, we should see an increase again, which will of course impact also our revenue. Positively.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. As a reminder again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star one. It appears there's no further questions at this time. I'd like to turn the conference back to the host for any additional or closing remarks. Thank you.
Thank you very much for all of you for joining us today, and we remain at your disposal for any follow-up questions. Thank you very much, and have a nice day.
Thank you for joining today's call. You may now disconnect.